Hello and welcome to edition number 2117 of the Witney Talking News, which we're recording in the High Street Methodist Church in Witney on Thursday the 16th of July. I'm Nigel James and I edited this edition, ably assisted by Ethan Morgan. Beside me at the recording controls we have Graham Diacon. This week we have articles from all over the place, from Shipping Norton, from Brize Norton, from Witney, and all over. So our four readers this evening are Anne Norris, John Ashwell, Bridget Walton and Andrew Dilger. So let's have our first story from Anne, which is about High Street Works.
The headline is High Street Work Blamed for Sharp Decline in Trade. Businesses in Witney say they are suffering a sharp trading decline because of council work on traffic changes in the town centre. Witney Chamber of Commerce has written to its local authorities and politicians after its members' trading figures declined by between 20 and 30% compared to last year. The worrying claim comes amid major changes to the centre of the town, with construction works ongoing to upgrade the High Street and Market Square. Beginning in May and due to be completed by November, Oxfordshire County Council say the works will make it easier for people to move around the High Street and access it. The completed scheme will include new seating areas and trees, resurfacing of approximately 2,000 metres squared of existing frontways and creating over 1,002 metres squared of new footway space and a new bus stop for community transport. However, the delayed project has not been without its controversy, with some questioning its benefits and whether it is worth the reported £4.4 million cost. Others criticise the timing. Councillor Thomas Ashby said, "As businesses navigate a climate of increased taxation by the Labour government, I worry that the summer construction will hinder our hospitality trade by eliminating outdoor service areas." Now, Adrian Bullock, chair of the Witney Chamber of Commerce, has said that there has been a significant drop in customers' numbers and a major impact on trading figures. He said, "For anyone involved in the retail or hospitality business, it should be immediately obvious that this level of decline is the majority, if not all, of a business's profit in these sectors, and this is at a time of the year when footfall should be at its maximum because of the weather. As such, he has called on West Oxfordshire District Council to consider reductions in business rates and for Oxfordshire County Council to implement signage at both Marriott's Walk and the Woolgate Shopping Centre car parks. The signs would read, 'We apologise for the disruption. Witney High Street remains open and all businesses are still trading. Please continue to support your town centre.'" Mr. Bullock added, "Your help and support in ensuring everything is done to support these businesses during this difficult time is vital for the future of the town centre once the project has been completed." West Oxfordshire District Council declined to comment, but county authorities said that they are exploring additional signage. A county council spokesperson added, "Our pedestrian monitoring data at the roundabout shows the number of people visiting the High Street is higher than at the same time last year."
Now we have John with our next story, which is about a parking trial which has been rejected.
Yes. Councillor blasts decision to reject parking trial. Was the heading? A councillor has criticised a district council's decision to reject a trial parking closure ahead of its proposed redevelopment plans. Councillor Liam Walker raised concerns after West Oxfordshire District Council dismissed a proposal to temporarily close parking bays at Witney's Woodford Way car park to assess the impact of removing spaces under plans to build new housing on the site. Earlier this year, Councillor Walker recommended a 2-week partial closure to gather data on how the loss of parking might affect residents and businesses. The council rejected this idea, arguing it would be unrepresentative and unduly disruptive. Councillor Walker said, "I find this decision completely baffling. A few months ago, I recommended a simple 2-week trial to understand the real impact of removing parking spaces before permanent decisions are made. The council now has rejected that recommendation because it says that the trial would cause disruptive residents. Well, yes, it would, but that's exactly why the trial should take place. If removing those parking spaces for just 2 weeks would cause disruption, surely permanently removing them to build housing would have an even greater impact on residents, shoppers, workers and local businesses." The council described the trial as too limited and said that the disruption would outweigh any potential benefit.
And our next story is about historic bridge closure in Burford and will be read by Bridget.
Historic bridge to close for major repairs. A Cotswold bridge will be closed overnight for improvement works. Burford Bridge, which runs along the A361, will be shut from July the 21st to 23rd between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. to allow Oxfordshire County Council to upgrade pedestrian facilities on the bridge. Burford Town Council said, "In the interests of public safety, it will be necessary for Oxfordshire County Council to close the road, as detailed above, in order to facilitate improvements to be made to the pedestrian facility on Burford Bridge. The closure will be managed under a temporary traffic regulation notice, which allows for urgent works to take place over a period of up to 5 days. Access will be maintained for emergency service vehicles and for those frontages within the closure area, subject to the progress of the works and liaison with the works supervisor."
And Andrew's first story this evening is about the revamp at RAF Bryce Norton.
And the heading is £180 million revamp underway at UK's busiest RAF airbase. A £180 million revamp is underway at the UK's busiest RAF airbase in West Oxfordshire, as the airfield is set to be closed later this year for the works. RAF Bryce Norton is facing a major infrastructure overhaul by the Ministry of Defence, MOD, including the replacement of the busy Airbus's runway as work has begun at the site. The RAF project, delivered in conjunction with the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, represents a multi-million pound investment in the long-term operation and resilience of the base. It comes as part of a £10 billion package to be invested in the defence estate over the next 10 years to modernise bases. Minister for Defence, Readiness and Industry, Luke Pollard, MP, said, "RAF Bryce Norton is the backbone of UK air mobility. This £180 million upgrade programme ensures it stays that way. Replacing the runway, upgrading critical systems and future-proofing the airfield is the long-term investment defence requires, which will create jobs and opportunities for the local community. It includes a full replacement of the 3-kilometre runway, the refurbishment of taxiways, upgrades to the airfield lighting systems and improvements to drainage and supporting infrastructure." John Crennell, Deputy Head, Air Infrastructure Major Programmes, said, "This is a critical programme to renew and modernise the infrastructure that underpins operations at RAF Bryce Norton. We've moved from design into delivery, and work is now underway to replace the runway and upgrade key airfield systems in a carefully phased way. While there will be a planned runway closure later this year, we've worked closely with the RAF to ensure operations continue seamlessly." It was earlier revealed that all airfield operations and flights will be temporarily relocated from Bryce Norton to various other UK locations, including MOD Boscombe Down, Bournemouth, Prestwick, East Midlands and Stansted airports. The company has committed to prioritising its supply chain within a 50-mile radius to support local businesses throughout construction. The project is also expected to create 20 full-time jobs, including 5 apprenticeships, and to provide 30 weeks of work experience for local candidates.
The heading is Start Date is Set for School Streets Trial. New school streets are to be trialled in September, aiming to make it easier for children to walk and cycle to school. Oxfordshire County Council will begin the trial on Wednesday, September the 2nd. Automatic number plate recognition, ANPR cameras, will monitor these roads, enforcing restrictions during school drop-off and pick-up times. This system replaces temporary gates and volunteers who previously managed traffic during these times. The affected schools are Edith Morehouse and St Joseph's Catholic Primary Schools in Carterton, Willowcroft Community Primary and St Birinus Boys School in Didcot, and Harriers Benbury Academy. The schools will close a section of the road outside their entrances for 45 minutes to 1 hour during school days only. The trial will be enforced by ANPR cameras, which will be active only during the set time periods. These cameras will issue automatic penalty charge notices to non-exempt vehicles entering the school street area during these times.
The heading, the next article, work starts to extend and refurbish ex-asylum hotel. A councillor said he's glad a former asylum seeker hotel in Whitney will once again be open to our community as work starts to extend and refurbish it. The Oxford Whitney Hotel in Ducklington Lane is being reconfigured to accommodate 14 additional suites on the ground floor. It was previously used as accommodation for asylum seekers in the UK from late 2022 until June this year, when the government shut down a host of hotels used for this purpose. Figures from the Home Office state that there were 124 asylum seekers living in the district as of June 30th this year, many of them likely to be in this hotel. A planning application to extend the hotel by 14 rooms, relocate the main reception and the health suite, including removing the pool and reconfiguring the entryways and landscaping. The plans were approved by West Oxfordshire District Council last December, and work has now begun on the site with the building fenced off. Sharing a video from a visit he made to the site, District Councillor Liam McKenzie, Conservative, for the Ducklington Ward, said he was glad to see it used as a hotel again, adding, "As you can see behind me, work is underway to prepare it for that use. The pool is being replaced with a number of new rooms, and the reception, the bar and the restaurant, and the conference facility are to be all upgraded. We are not exactly sure how or even when this will reopen, but having heard from people who have worked here, who have held their wedding receptions here, or who have had relatives stay here while visiting them, I'm glad that this hotel is returning to use as a community hotel. The number of asylum seekers being housed temporarily in the UK hotels has fallen to its lowest level since data was first reported in 2022, according to the Home Office, figures published last month. There were 20,885 people staying in such accommodation while they were awaiting a decision on their asylum claims at the end of March, down 35% year on year from 32,326. The total had climbed as high as 56,018 at the end of September 23. This figure is part of a broader total of 423 asylum seekers temporarily housed in hotels across the wider Oxfordshire region.
And now we're delighted to welcome again Hilary Ewing, who's going to give us our reflection for the evening. Thank you, Hilary.
Thank you. Good to be here again. In the midst of life, we are in death. You've probably heard this phrase, an English translation from the original Latin and part of a Gregorian chant. It speaks of part of the human condition, reminding us that we are mortal in this life. It's a more eloquent way, perhaps, to say, as Woody Allen has apparently done, that death is the ultimate statistic, for one out of one dies. I've been reflecting on two recent deaths, and please bear with me because I'm not speaking in a gloom and doom way. One of the deaths was of an elderly lady, aged 90, and she was in a care home. The last year of her life, she was mainly in bed, but she was well cared for, always pleased to see family or visitors, and very appreciative of any kindness shown to her. Because it was thought that she was rapidly approaching her death last August, her family, who live quite some distances away, made extra efforts to be with her then and continued their visits in the ensuing months. This gave them a lot of time with her and more opportunities to relate to one another, bringing them closer together. This was a lady who had put her faith in Jesus Christ and so was not afraid of death and was at peace, knowing that death was simply the gateway to a much fuller life in God's presence. The other death is of politician and broadcaster Anne Widdecombe, aged 78. Probably none of us round the table, nor you, the listeners, knew her personally, but we may well have heard her speaking on radio or television. This death was a violent one. The motive is not yet fully understood, but we do know that it was premeditated. In this case, there was no time for loved ones to gather, no time to put things in order, no time for last goodbyes. And yet there is one thing that is key in this case too. Anne also had a strong Christian faith, and so although the manner of her death was shocking and very sad, she would not have been afraid to die. In her later years, Anne transferred from the Anglican to the Catholic Church, so there will be some kind of mass, a funeral mass, or a requiem mass which includes the Eucharist. I have taken many funeral services, mostly of those who were older in years. In each case, I've tried to convey something of the deceased's life and character, or enabled family or friends to do so. In every case, I have pointed to the one who has overcome death, and I have encouraged all those who are still living to put their faith and trust in Christ and in his reconciling death on the cross. I don't know what scriptures will be read at Anne's funeral, but the scriptures most frequently requested are the Shepherd's Psalm, Psalm 23, and part of Jesus' words to his friends shortly before his arrest, words from John 14. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I am going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going. Thomas, one of the 12, said to him, Lord, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way? Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And usually verse 27 is added at the end. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid.
Thank you very much, Hilary, for those those deep meaning thoughts there, particularly about Anne Widdicombe, and we look forward to your next visit with us. Thank you.
Hope you all have a good summer.
Our next story is about a rare green Ferrari which is going to be on display at Blenheim Palace and is going to be read by Ethan.
Headline reads today, Rare Green Ferrari to Join Palace Show. A rare Ferrari is set to make its debut at an exclusive car show at Blenheim Palace. The Ferrari 365 GTC4, finished in a rare verde Blenheim colour, will be showcased at the luxury Salon Privé Automotive Even this September in the Passione Ferrari Concours class. One of just three models originally painted in verde Blenheim and believed to be the only one with the beige interior, the car was first registered in January 1972 and delivered to its original owner, Baron Giovanni Celestri, in the following month. Andrew Bagley, the chairman and co-founder of Salon Privé, said the Ferrari 365 GTC4 is one of the cars that is often overshadowed by some of Ferrari's more famous models, but those who know them appreciate just how special they are. To find an example as rare as the original, as this is remarkable enough, but the fact it is finished in Verde Blenheim makes the Salon Privé Concours field at Blenheim Palace the ideal stage for the 365, where its owner can showcase its rarity, provenance and fascinating history in equal measure. The car spent more than 40 years in Italy, passing through several owners before moving to Germany in 2013. Salon Privé 2026 will mark its first public appearance at Blenheim Palace. Built between 1971 and 1972, the Ferrari 365 GTC4 features a 4.4-litre combo V12 engine producing 340 base horsepower and was capable of reaching speeds up to 163 miles per hour. Only 505 units were ever produced, making it even rarer than the iconic Ferrari Daytona. Designed by Pininfarina, the car is equipped with pop-up headlights, power steering, air conditioning, and occasional rear seating, offering a blend of high performance and long-distance comfort. The 365 joins a standout collection of entries this year's Salon Privé, including a 1952 Ferrari, originally owned by Argentinian President Juan Perón, 1953 Bristol 4x4 prototype, a 1963 Mercedes-Benz, and a 1982 Lamborghini. Salon Privé will return to Blenheim Palace from September 2nd to the 6th. The event will feature the Salon Privé Concours by Avia Private Clients, which will showcase some of the rarest and most significant privately owned vehicles from around the world, judged by an international panel of experts. For tickets and bookings, visit salonprivéconcours.com.
We can't wait. Open date set for pubs reopening. A historic pub will reopen this weekend after being closed for almost 3 years. The Fox Inn in Middle Barton, near Chipping Norton, will welcome patrons again after a businessman stepped in with a successful offer to buy the building. The pub, which dates back to the early 1800s, will reopen on Saturday, July the 18th, following a community campaign to keep it alive. It is thought to have been a pub since at least 1809, with the site's significance recognised in 2022 when it was granted Asset of Community Value, ACV, status. The pub's owners, Stonegate, decided to put it on the market a few months after the ACV status was awarded. The Barton's Community Benefit Society Limited had been trying to gather funds to buy the pub themselves. However, businessman Tony O'Sullivan stepped in with a successful offer. The new proposal for the Fox Inn states it will be open every day of the week, will welcome dogs, and will serve food. The pub will not feature guest rooms, but the garden has also had a major refurbishment. Two memorial plaques were displayed to honour regular members, John Barrows and Ken Giles, with the new owners saying they remain as a lasting tribute to their memory and their place in the Fox's history. The owners, Tony and Richard, decided to slightly delay the opening to allow more time for work to be completed on the cafe area and the car park. Inside the pub, the finishing touches are being added, including completing and installing the bar system and bringing in furniture. A special blessing of the pub was conducted by Father Clive, marking an important milestone in its journey back to the community. The owners expressed their gratitude to Father Clive for taking time to visit and share the moment with them. The Fox Inn will open its doors to the public once more, promising a memorable celebration for the community. In a statement, the owners said, "We can't wait to open our doors and welcome back the community to the Fox. We hope to see as many of you there as possible for what promises to be a fantastic celebration. The community eagerly anticipates the reopening, with everyone hoping for a prosperous future for the Fox Inn. Indeed, according to Sky News, analysis of government figures revealed 209 pubs were demolished or converted for other uses over the opening 6 months of around of 2025. That is around 8 pubs every week.
Cotswold Rivers Trust recruiting 2 new trustees. The Cotswolds Rivers Trust is calling for new trustees to help guide its future work. The trust, which works to protect, restore and enhance the rivers, streams and wetlands across the Cotswolds, is seeking 2 additional trustees, particularly those with experience in finance, governance and environmental management. Jack Knott, Trust Manager, said, "If you are interested in shaping, strengthening and adding to the work of the Trust, we encourage you to apply. This is a rewarding opportunity to give back to the environment and local community while broadening your own professional skills and experience. Trustees will help guide the Trust's strategic direction, ensure good governance with an opportunity for a hands-on approach in supporting the delivery of practical, science-led river restoration. The roles are voluntary, but offer the opportunity to contribute to an ambitious environmental charity at an exciting stage of its development. The Trust is inviting applications from people passionate about the natural environment."
And the next piece is headed up, "Duke denies strangling and intimidation allegations." The Duke of Marlborough has denied threatening his estranged wife with a dagger, intimidating her with his driving and strangling her. Charles Spencer Churchill is accused of 3 intentional strangulations, three strangulation offences against Edla Spencer Churchill between November 22nd, 2022 and May 2024. He's also charged with 2 counts of controlling and coercive behaviour against the same woman between December 29, 2015 and September the 8th, 2024. The court heard the allegations include general verbal abuse, use of a dagger to intimidate, driving in a manner to scare her, and controlling the family home of Blenheim Palace in Woodstock. Spencer Churchill is accused of striking Ms. Spencer Churchill several times following an argument in the garden of their home before putting his hands around her neck in November 13, 2022. The court was previously told that on April the 23rd, 23, Ms. Spencer Churchill ran into the laundry room before the defendant. It is alleged that he grabbed her, hit her with a closed fist and strangled her. The final allegation is that the Duke pushed Ms. Spencer Churchill on the bed and assaulted her after putting his hands around her neck on January the 29th, 24. The Duke yesterday appeared at Oxford Crown Court to plead not guilty to all 5 charges. A provisional trial is set for January 10th, 2028, with a new estimate of 10 to 12 days. The 70-year-old is on the bail, is on bail with the condition not to contact any complainant or witness. His court summons followed his arrest on May the 13th last year.
Two short closure stories. Bookshop announces closure after 40 years. A 40-year-old Christian bookshop is to close this weekend. St Andrew's Bookshop on High Street, Whitney, released a statement announcing its sudden closure this weekend. In a statement, the owners said, "It is with the greatest sadness and the heaviest of hearts that I announce the closure of our beloved little shop. Our doors will be closing permanently from Sunday. It has been an absolute privilege to have served our and the wider community for so many years. We would like to thank our customers for their support." The reason for the sudden closure is unknown. And secondly, county stores not part of closure plans. Morrison's will not close any of its Oxfordshire shops, cafes, florists or pharmacies this year. It has been confirmed. The supermarket had already announced 40 cafes across the country would close this year as part of a restructuring programme. The retail giant will also close 17 daily convenience stores, 13 florists, 4 pharmacies, and all 18 market kitchens. The business says it faces cost pressures made worse by government policy. The shops set for closure have been unprofitable for years and were former McColl's shops, which the chain rescued in 2022, it said. The proposals will see stores closed in the next few months, and hundreds of shop workers are understood to be at risk of redundancy.
Bublé's mellow finale to Palace Fest. Canadian singer Michael Bublé brought a show-stopping end to the Blenheim Palace Festival. He closed the event earlier this month with a night of music and laughter. The show featured fan favourites and classic tracks spanning the singer's career. The concert was supported by British-Canadian duo Appleton, featuring sisters Natalia and Nicole Appleton of All Saints and the UK mariachi favourites The Mariachis. The festival marked its debut year with a lineup of global talent with Peter Tong, Morissette, Teddy Swims and Katy Perry. The festival replaced the long-running Nocturne Live concert series.
And now it's quiz time. And first of all, the answers to last week's quiz, which was set by Debbie. And question one, who discovered penicillin? And the answer is...
Alexander Fleming.
Question two, how many bones are there in the adult human body?
200 something.
And the answer is 206. Question three, what was the name of the founder of Microsoft?
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates is right. Question four, in which year did the French Revolution begin?
1789.
1789 is right, yes. And question five, what is the largest desert in the world? Antarctica is right.
It's not what you think of, is it?
Right, so team, no shouting out with the answers of these until because they'll have the chance next week. Question one. The film Anne of a Thousand Days portrayed which queen? Question two. Born William Henry Pratt, who was the actor to play Frankenstein's monster? Question three. In which limb are the soleus muscles? Question four. How many times was Queen Elizabeth I married? Question five. Which singer was nicknamed the Queen of Soul? And the answers to those questions will be given to you by Byron next week. And so we move on to our next item, which is about Princess Anne's visit to a brewery.
Ale brewery is given royal approval from Princess. A real ale brewery received a royal approval with a visit by Princess Anne. the Princess Royal visited the Hook Norton Brewery in West Oxfordshire to mark a significant chapter in the history of one of England's last remaining family-owned Victorian Tower breweries. Schoolchildren lined the route as Her Royal Highness arrived at the main entrance on Brewery Lane, where she was received by the Lord Lieutenant of Oxfordshire, Mrs. Marjorie Glasgow. The Hook Norton Brass Band played as Mrs. Glasgow presented the Chairman, Mr. Jonathan Paveley, and Managing Director, Mr. James Clark, alongside a group of schoolchildren reflecting the brewery's long-standing connection with the local community. The visit held particular significance as the Princess last visited Hook Norton Brewery in 1999, when she unveiled a plaque that now stands in the visitors' centre. During today's visit, she passed that same plaque before touring the brewery's museum, retail facilities, restaurant, engine room, and the newly restored stable courtyard. The Princess met staff, directors, local representatives, and community figures during her tour. These included Banbury MP Sean Woodcock and Oxfordshire County Council Chair Ted Fenton. Also in attendance were the Chair of Charwell District Council, Nigel Simpson, and the High Sheriff of Oxfordshire, Mr. Jawed Malik. In the stable courtyard, Her Royal Highness met those involved in the brewery's recent restoration project following the devastating fire in 2024, before proceeding to the stables to meet Hook Norton's three celebrated shire horses, Balmoral, Brigadier and Cromwell. She was accompanied by representatives of the Shire Horse Society. The visit concluded with the Princess unveiling a new plaque to mark the restoration, signing the visitor's book and receiving a gift and posy. Mr. James Clark, Managing Director of Hook Norton Brewery, said, "It was an absolute honour to welcome Her Royal Highness to the brewery. The occasion was to celebrate the brewery's 175th anniversary, delayed by the stable's fire in 2024. As well as a celebration of the brewery, it was also very much a celebration of community and the brewery's long-standing relationship." Speaking after the visit, Mrs. Glasgow said, "Hook Norton Brewery is one of Oxfordshire's great treasures, and it was a real honour to welcome the Princess Royal back, nearly 27 years after her last visit, to see how it has continued to thrive. Her Royal Highness took a genuine interest in everyone she met, from the brewery's long-serving staff to the schoolchildren who came to welcome her. And that warmth was very much felt by all present." And there's a photograph accompanying this, perhaps showing that one of her greatest interests was one of those horses, all beautifully decked out with his really fancy harness all around it, and she's reaching out to stroke its nose.
And you've been very patient. Here it is, the Jeremy Clarkson story. The headline is: Clarkson given planning boost over farm car park. Jeremy Clarkson has been given a major boost in his battle to extend his farm's temporary car park until 2030, thanks to the ongoing success of the show. The star has won high-level backing from the Highways Authority in his bid to resolve longer-term car parking woes at Diddley Squat Farm. He had previously been embroiled in a much-publicised parking battle with the council as visitors flocked to the site due to the success of the Prime Video series Clarkson's Farm. The 66-year-old was eventually granted permission on appeal in June 2023 to extend the temporary car park on land previously used for agriculture to deal with the influx. Under the imposed conditions, Mr. Clarkson was ordered to return the land to its original state within 3 years, which gave him a deadline of June this year. But with the ongoing success of the show, that has just recently been commissioned for a sixth season to air next year, his team applied to West Oxfordshire District Council for planning permission to extend this deadline until the end of 2030. And while that application is still under consideration, he has now received the support of Oxfordshire County Council, which raised no objection to its continuing while visitor numbers remain high. Oliver Eden, the Transport Development Lead for the County Council, wrote, "Oxfordshire County Council support the extension of the temporary permission as suggested to align with the expected ongoing demand associated with the television series schedule. The additional car parking is an important facility in accommodating car parking that would otherwise likely cause disruption and safety concerns on the adjacent highway. During the earlier battle, the Planning Inspectorate approved the car parking extension to combat severe traffic issues on the surrounding rural roads, but refused plans for a permanent restaurant there. Mr. Clarkson's representatives said the original conditions needed amendment as Season 6 has already been commissioned, which will air in summer 2027. When the original permission was granted on appeal, the second series had just been aired, and the length of impact on the surrounding area was not clear, they said. Mr. Clarkson's representatives added, "The site continues to be popular and attracts sufficient customers to warrant the provision of additional parking. It maintains the associated benefits to the farms and other businesses that supply the farm shop and cafe, and in turn, the economic and social well-being of the wider area." They continue, "The provision of the dedicated additional parking and careful monitoring by the applicants has also ensured that parking on the adjacent highway is precluded. The landscaping around the car park area has started to mature and assists in assimilating the site into the surrounding landscape and existing sylvan backdrop."
And now we come to Editor's Choice, and this week again we are delving into the book On This Day in Oxfordshire by Julie Anne Godson. On this day in 1697, the body of the Lenthal family steward, John Prior, was found hidden in the grounds of Burford Priory. Prior's deceased employer, William Lenthal, had been rather unlucky in his choice of wife. Catherine Hamilton was famously promiscuous, and the marriage was a deeply unhappy one. When William died in 1686, he left his estate in the care of two trustees, his steward, John Prior, and his friend, Sir Edmund Flettyplace, to be held for his eldest son, John. In the meantime, Catherine married again, this time to her cousin, Charles Hamilton, 5th Earl of Abercorn. He and Catherine supposedly wanted to gain control of the Burford estate before young John Lenthal became of age. But Prior put up a spirited opposition to their attempts. At least, that was the story that circulated following the discovery of Prior's body. On the 16th of July, Earl Abercorn was tried for murder in Oxford, but was soon acquitted. One outraged observer of the trial wrote, "The murder was clear, yet the jury, being bribed, he was brought in not guilty. They were also drunk." Poor John Prior is buried at the church and commemorated on a stone in the chancel. His burial entry in the parish register reads, "Mr. John Prior, murdered and found hid in the Priory Gardens, was buried April the 6th. However, Thomas Phillips' Oxfordshire Monumental Inscriptions, 1825, gives a different explanation for the murder. "This John Prior was steward to some gentleman, and having advanced money to his employer, had the tithes secured to himself, which was supposed to have been the cause of his death. John Lenthal succeeded to his father's estate, married, and had a family, and Burford Priory remained in the Lenthal family until 1828. And now we come to our notice board, and there are no listeners' birthdays this week. And listed, we only have two deaths listed in the Whitney Gazette, The first being Andrew Andy Pledge of Whitney, who died on the 23rd of June, aged 67. And William Williamson, who died in early this year, aged 98. And he was, for years, an electrician for Early's Whitney, the blanket factory. And a death not listed in the Gazette, and we've only heard of this evening, is one of our listeners, Jessie Ely, who died this week. And we are very grateful to her daughter for a most generous donation in Jessie's memory. We are also looking for a listener representative to join the committee of the Talking News. Anne Martin, who originally was this, no longer was able to continue that role. So if anyone would feel they have the inclination or ability to join the committee as our listener representative, please put a slip of paper in your pouch and we will get in contact with you. Please stay listening at the end of this edition for the Talking News Federation listings for radio programmes for the coming week and also audio described programmes. So that's it for the notice board this week, and we'll now continue with our readings.
Family Jeweller celebrates 50 years of business. A family-run jeweller is marking 50 years of business on the High Street. Colzer Jewellers, established in 1976 on Chipping Norton High Street, was founded by Stuart and Anita Cole after they saw a gap in the market for a local jewellery shop. Since 2003, the shop has been run by Stuart Hindley and Martin Hanks, who have continued to grow the business while staying true to its community-focused roots. Stuart Hindley said, "As an independent family-run jeweller, we've had the privilege of serving generations of local families, often welcoming grandparents, parents, and now grandchildren through our doors, and have been part of people's most important occasions. In an ever-changing high street, we are incredibly proud to have remained a constant presence in the town for five decades, when so many of our competitors have closed over the years. Coles has adapted over the years by expanding its jewellery repair services and offering a curated selection of antique, vintage and contemporary pieces. The team also carries out watch repairs and battery replacements and frequently goes the extra mile for customers, including visits to the local care home. Anniversary promotions will be running throughout July."
Village Surgery is highest rated in the county rankings. The best and worst performing county GP surgeries have been revealed in the NHS, with the top spot taken by a West Oxfordshire village practice. The best performing GP surgery in the county was Wychwood Surgery in Shipton under Wychwood, with 90% of respondents rating it very good, and none giving it a fairly or very poor rating. The results of the GP patient survey for the NHS England are based on data including how easy patients find it to contact their GP, as well as reception and administration ratings. Almost 3 million surveys were distributed by market research agency IPOS or Ipsos, with around 650,000 responses received in England between January and April. Beresfield Health Centre near Wallingford also performed well with an 88% very good rating, as did Cropredy Surgery in the village near Banbury on 86%, and Sibford also in North Oxfordshire on 85%. The Bell in Henley and Islip near Bicester both received 80% very good ratings. The worst performing GP surgery in Oxfordshire was Luther Street Medical Practice in Oxford, with 14% of respondents calling it very poor. Also performing badly was the Nuffield Health Centre in Whitney and Woodland Medical Centre in Didcot, which both received 10% very poor scores. At Oak Tree Health Centre in Didcot, 8% of patients thought it was very poor. The survey also revealed that a rising number of people are turning to online GP services to get in touch with their local surgery. Some 31% of people contacted their GP service online when they needed care, up from 22% in 2025 and 17% in 2024. About 69% said the wait for their last appointment was about right. Almost three quarters, 74%, said their last appointment was face to face, up from 69% in 2024. And 23% were dealt with over the phone, down from 29%.
I have two short items. New food and gift fairs coming to the area this autumn. A series of food and gift fairs are set to celebrate local producers this autumn. The three events, organised by cookbook author and event organiser Becky Hunt, will showcase independent food producers, artists and craftspeople. The Bampton Autumn Fair and Gift Fair... I beg your pardon, I'll try that again. The Bampton Autumn Food and Gift Fair will kick off the festivities on Saturday, October the 17th, with 17 exhibitors at Bampton Village Hall and the Market Tavern, offering handcrafted gifts, homewares, jewellery, ceramics, artwork, textiles, artisan food, sweet treats and seasonal specialities. The event, which will run from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m, promises a friendly community atmosphere and is free to enter. Following this, the Burford Autumn Food and Gift Fair will take place on Saturday, October the 31st at Warwick Hall, Burford, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. This fair, set in one of the Cotswolds' most picturesque towns, will feature a curated selection of artisan food producers and makers. Visitors can browse locally produced food and drink, handcrafted gifts, home accessories, artwork, and seasonal treats. Finally, the Burford Christmas Food and Gift Market will be held on Saturday, November the 28th, also at Warwick Hall. This market will offer a range of Christmas gifts, artisan food and seasonal delights. It is a chance to enjoy festive shopping before heading into Burford for the town's Christmas celebration and lights switch on. All three events aim to support small British businesses and provide a unique shopping experience for visitors. And secondly, step into a fairy tale this summer. Visitors will be transported into classic storybook worlds as part of a magical family festival. Fairytale Farm near Chipping Norton will host its Fairytale Festival from July the 18th to September the 1st, promising a full programme of interactive storytelling, puppet activities, games and animal experiences. New this year is the Journey to Alice's Wonderland ride. Families board colourful snail vehicles for a gentle journey through indoor and outdoor scenes inspired by Alice's adventures. Children will be invited to play characters during storytelling sessions, take part in puppet performances, and tackle themed games across the site. All activities are included in standard admission, with no additional tickets required.
Gymnasts to walk 640 kilometres to fund new equipment. A county gymnastics club is taking on a long-distance challenge to help raise funds for much-needed equipment. Summit Gymnastics Club has launched a sponsored walk with gymnasts, parents and supporters aiming to collectively walk 640 kilometres. The walk will take place on July the 22nd along the Ridgeway. The club hosts events including display team trials, squad squad sessions and competitions at host venues in the county, such as the Carterton Gymnastics Club. A spokesman for the club said, "This is a fantastic opportunity for our gymnasts, parents and families to come together outside the gym, challenge themselves and support the club at the same time. The 640-kilometre distance represents the journey from Oxford to Glasgow, the host city of the Commonwealth Games, and will be completed as a team effort. Funds raised will go towards the purchase of a new vaulting equipment, estimated to cost around £1,600, to help gymnasts safely develop their skills. Donations can be made via the club's GoFundMe page at gofundme.com/summit-640km.
Two short stories. Pride Festival to celebrate community. Preparations are underway for a community pride event which is returning for its fourth year. Chipping Norton Pride returns on July the 25th with the theme of Love Out Loud, which celebrates growing support from the community and the spirit of inclusivity. The celebration will run from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. with market stalls, performances and a raffle during the day, followed by an evening of entertainment at the Town Hall from 7 p.m. until late. Sean Vasson, chair of the event, said, "We're incredibly proud to be bringing Chipping Norton Pride back for its fourth year. Love Out Loud is about celebrating the strength, warmth and diversity of our community, whether you're part of the LGBTQIA community or a valued ally." And the second story is RAF Falcons at Grand Prix. An RAF display team from the county delighted racing fans at the Silverstone British Grand Prix. The RAF Falcons parachute display team, based at RAF Bryce Norton, took to the skies ahead of the event on Sunday, arriving under their distinctive red, white and blue canopies and landing with precision. The display formed a highlight of the day at what is widely regarded as one of the UK's most prestigious sporting events. Flight Lieutenant Compton Davis, officer commanding the RAF Falcons, said, "The support from the crowd was incredible and the team were proud to represent the Royal Air Force on such a prestigious stage."
And here's our final story of this edition, and it's a very colourful one. The headline is, "Crowds brave 30-degree heat to enjoy special carnival." Various societies, groups and businesses turned out for this year's Whitney Carnival on Saturday, July the 11th, which was held during the latest heat wave. It began with a procession from Station Lane on the Lees at 11 a.m, which went around Whitney before returning to the Lees by midday. At the park, there were a variety of performances from community groups in the afternoon, such as Buttercross Theatre Productions, Knox Gymnastics and Mark's Magic Mayhem. Charlie Maynard, MP for Whitney, was present as the special guest judge for the Schools in Bloom competition. And Mayor of Whitney, Jane Doughty, was also at the event. And there are a number of fantastic photos with this article, all of them overexposed. Who knows why? Maybe it was hot. Two in particular are worth mentioning. The first shows a Scottish marching band, complete with kilts and sporrans and hats and sunglasses, every one of them. And the other image, which is extremely notable, is a procession of vintage Vespas. And each of the riders is wearing shorts, Hawaiian shirts, garlands and, yes, sunglasses.
Well, that's all we have time for this week. As well as listening to the USB stick you receive from us each week, there are several other ways that you can listen to all our editions, including magazines. And these include the internet, Alexa, and full details are available on our website at wtn.org.uk. Just follow the link. And stay tuned after the end of this edition for the TNF radio listenings for the coming week and audio Describe TV programmes. Please remove the memory stick from the playback unit and close the metal shield. Remember to reverse the plastic address label on your pouch before posting it back to us. And this can go into any postbox. It doesn't have to be taken to a post office. Please do this as soon as possible, as we sometimes run out of labels and pouches and are unable to continue our service to you. If you wish to contact us, simply put a slip of paper in your pouch and we will then telephone you. And you can also use this method if you wish to comment about the content of Whitney Talking News editions so that we may improve our service to you. So, it only remains for me to thank the Whitney Gazette for the stories we've used tonight, and to Julianne Godson for her extract from On This Day in Oxfordshire. Our thanks also to our technical expert, Graham Diacon, and to our copiers, who will be Andrew and myself. We will be copying the memory sticks to our and also to our volunteers who've been checking them in, who are keeping tabs in our records, and these are Dorothy Allen and Lynn Harding. And finally, to our readers, Anne Norris, John Ashwell, Bridget Walton, Andrew Dilger, and Ethan Morgan. And I know everyone would like to say goodbye, but before we say goodbye, we've been asked to do our usual joke. So, a couple go into a restaurant for dinner, and the waiter asks, "How would you like your steak cooked?" And the husband replies, like winning an argument with my wife. And the waiter says, "Ah, that'll be rare then, sir, will it?" And so, I know that everyone would like to say goodbye, and so until our next edition, goodbye.
Goodbye.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, I'm David, and I'm bringing you some radio highlights for this coming week that I hope you will enjoy listening to in the days ahead. Saturday the 18th of July. In Sounds of the 60s, Tony Blackburn marks the 70th anniversary of the UK albums chart, plus the top three from this week in 1965. Sounds of the 60s is on Radio 2 at 6 a.m. Greg Jenner explores the swashbuckling lives of two female pirates in You're Dead to Me on Radio 4 at 10 a.m. The Double is a 21st century drama reimagining Fyodor Dostoevsky's second novel of that name. The Double is on BBC Radio 4 Extra at 4 p.m. Today's vintage comedy is an episode of the legal comedy Brothers-in-Law on Radio 4 Extra at 9:30 a.m. repeated at 8:30 p.m. The BBC Prom this evening is a celebration of progressive rock music, a.k.a. prog rock, with the BBC Concert Orchestra, and that's on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. Archive on 4 brings you the story of Alan Watts, the Brahman of Bromley, unpacking the complex concepts of Buddhism, Zen and Taoism with clarity and wry humour. The Brahman of Bromley is on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. And Sunday, the 19th of July. Sunday worship this morning comes from Cardiff, led by Dr. Graham Daniels, a former professional footballer and General Director of Christians in Sport. The service marks today's World Cup final, and that's on Radio 4 at 8:10 a.m. Lauren Laverne's guest on Desert Island Discs is the country pop superstar Shania Twain, on Radio 4 at 10 a.m, repeated on Friday at 9 a.m. The first of two BBC Proms concerts today brings you the Black Dyke Band live from the Albert Hall with a concert of contemporary brass band pieces on Radio 3 at 11 a.m. Classic comedy today is a 1955 episode of Take It From Here, BBC Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. And the second of today's prom concerts is live from the Royal Albert Hall with the Spanish National Orchestra, 7 p.m. on Radio 3. Just One Thing with Michael Mosley. Listen to Music, How Music Can Alter Connections in the Brain, on Radio 4 at 7:45 p.m. And now for some programmes that are broadcast each weekday at the same time. A Meditation on Mud, written and read by Rebecca Stott. Following her mother's death, she sets out to discover hidden depths and meanings in mud. That's on Radio 4 each morning at 11:45 a.m. In Dead Rabbit, 20 dead animals are left outside a village school. The series explores who put them there and why. Dead Rabbit is on Radio 4 each day at 1:45 p.m. Composer of the Week this week is George Frideric Handel, on Radio 3 each afternoon at 4 p.m. Book at Bedtime is Wild Dark Shore by Charlotte McConaughey, on Radio 4 each evening at 10:45 p.m. In Nature Bang, the presenters examine the science behind phenomena in the natural world and ask whether it can be applied to humans. And that's on Radio 4 each evening at 11:30 p.m. Then Monday, the 20th of July. Today's vintage comedy is a 1976 edition of Dad's Army on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. In Church Going, Giles Fraser explores the idea of England as a Christian country. Radio 4 at 11 a.m. Classical Live on Radio 3 brings you excerpts from last Friday's First Night of the Proms. That's on Radio 3 at 7 p.m. Sue Perkins hosts a new series of the comedy panel game, Just a Minute, at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4. Tonight's BBC Prom is a concert with music from Bach and Beethoven, including Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, on Radio 3 at 7 p.m. Tuesday, the 21st of July, a double bill of classic comedy today starts with a 1984 edition of Yes Minister, followed immediately by a 1958 episode of The Goon Show, on Radio 4 Extra at 7 a.m, 12 noon and 6 p.m. In Assignment, Sofia Bettiza explores how schools in southern Italy are tackling the country's child obesity crisis. The BBC World Service at 9:30 a.m. Heart and Soul, Fighting for the Children of Chernobyl, marks 40 years since the nuclear disaster, on Radio 4 at 3:30 p.m. Childhood, Youth and Motherhood is the first in a new series exploring the writing of Sylvia Plath, on Radio 4 at 4 p.m. And BBC Proms Live at 6 p.m. includes the Sibelius Violin Concerto, followed by a further live concert at 10:15 p.m. with music from Dowland, Purcell and Handel. Radio 3 at 6 p.m. with a second concert at 10:15 p.m. Wednesday, the 22nd of July. Vintage Comedy Today is a 1955 episode of Hancock's Half Hour. That's on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. Annie Nightingale's Age of Irreverence explores the youth revolution of the late 1950s and 60s onwards, on Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. The documentary How Did We Get Here? Johnny Diamond explores the complex history of Israel and the Palestinians. BBC World Service at 1:30 p.m. And Choral Evensong comes from Buckfast Abbey on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. And the BBC Proms Live from the Royal Albert Hall this evening includes music from Georgi Kurtag and Mahler, and that's on Radio 3 at 7 p.m. Then Thursday, the 23rd of July. A 1965 episode of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again is today's vintage comedy. Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. The documentary Love on Trial explores the impact in India of raising the age of consent to 18, at the same time protecting minors and recognising the realities of teenage relationships. BBC World Service at 9:30 a.m. and 8:05 p.m. Good Bad Billionaire, a profile of Sir Paul McCartney and where his billions come from. On BBC World Service at 10:30 a.m. The Big Payback is a comedy drama written by Sir Lenny Henry, and that's on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. And today's BBC Prom is a spiritually charged concert of choral and orchestral music that pierces the veil between heaven and earth, on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. And then Friday, the 24th of July, classic comedy today is a 1961 episode of Beyond Our Ken, on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. The food programme, What Happened Next? Leila Kazim revisits some of the programme's most memorable stories to find out how they have developed. The food programme is on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. Screenshot celebrates the 40th anniversary of Day Off, looking at films that confine their action to a single day. Radio 4 at 7:15 p.m. BBC Proms this evening sees the return of Sinfonia of London with music from Verdi, Walton and Respighi. Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. And that concludes my selection for this week. I do hope you've found it both helpful and entertaining.
Now for a selection of the audio described television programmes, starting Saturday, 18th of July, and ending Friday, the 24th. Compiled by Sarah, read by Chris, and with John doing the techie stuff. Let's start with Saturday. BBC One kick off with the weekend edition of Bargain Hunt at 12. After that, the afternoon on BBC One is taken up with live Diamond League Athletics from London. This is not audio described, but the commentary may be of interest to some. Similarly, there's live coverage of National Championship Rugby on ITV starting at 7:30 in the morning. It basically continues all day, with matches between various teams, including England versus Argentina, at 7:30 in the evening. Over on Channel 4 at 6, it's Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It this week in Wandsworth. Into the evening, Casualty has its usual slot on BBC One at 8:20. If you'd like a film, head over to Channel 4 at 9 for the comedy drama Wicked Little Letters, followed at 10:55 by the black comedy horror The Menu, also on Channel 4. Alternatively, on ITV at 10:45, it's the action comedy thriller Bad Boys. BBC One are showing the World Cup third place playoff, with coverage starting at 9:30 and kick-off at 10. No audio description, but commentary. Now on to Sunday. Start your morning on ITV at 11:25 with Fern Britton Inside the Vets. There's also Deal or No Deal Celebrity Special at 1:15. At 1 on Channel 4, Jamie Cook's Mediterranean, which is followed by The Doghouse at 2:05, and then George Clark's Amazing Spaces at 3:05, also on Channel 4. Your afternoon film choices are Spider-Man No Way Home on BBC One at 3:15, or the Bond classic Diamonds Are Forever over on ITV also at 3:15. At 3:55 on Channel 4, the series Our Farm Next Door, Amanda Clive and Kids, starts again. This is followed at 5 by another episode of Britain's favourite railway stations with Cy King. This week, the chef fulfils a lifelong dream on a visit to Snowdon Mountain Railway. Into the evening, there's not much choice, as both BBC One and ITV are showing the World Cup final, with coverage starting at 7 and kick-off at 8. No audio description, but with the usual sports commentary. Your limited alternatives are The Piano on Channel 4 at 9, when Claudia and Mika are joined by jazz superstar Jamie Cullen. This is followed by Celebrity Gogglebox, with various celebrities being paid to watch telly and make funny comments. Before we move on to the rest of the week, here are the regular soaps and programmes which are on the same channel each day. Starting with the soaps. Monday through to Thursday, it's EastEnders at 7:30, Emmerdale at 8, followed by Coronation Street at 8:30. You've a break from EastEnders on Friday, but Emmerdale and Coronation Street are on at their usual time. In terms of regular programmes, on at the same time each day, BBC One starts each weekday with Animal Park at 9:30, followed by Expert Witness at 10:45. The morning continues with Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15, then Bargain Hunt at 12:15. Each afternoon, there's Rick Stein's Australia at 2:45, then Escape to the Country at 3 p.m, with the exception of Wednesday. Finally, The Travelling Auctioneer is on at 4:45. On Monday, Tuesday and Friday at 3:15 on BBC Two, there's The Hidden World of Hospitality with Tom Kerridge. On Wednesday and Thursday at that time, there's Live Cricket from the 100 series. On ITV each day at 2 p.m, it's Dickinson's Deal, whereas on Channel 4, the regular daytime viewing starts with American Pickers at 11:10. This is followed an hour later by Car SOS. In the afternoon, there's Narrow Escapes at 4 p.m, and Chateau DIY an hour later at 5 p.m. Now on to Monday. In addition to the regular daytime and tea time programmes, your choice is as follows. Mastermind is on BBC Two at 7:30. This isn't audio described, but may still be of interest to some. Over on ITV at the same time, Fletcher's Family Farm continues with a trip to the Royal Cheshire Show. Over on Channel 4 at 8, you can learn about Britain's busiest port, in Dover 24/7. There's plenty of choice in the 9 p.m. slot. On BBC Two, Chris Packham continues his quest for the secrets of life on Earth in his new series Evolution. Over on ITV, police drama continues with The Dark, with D.I. Kennedy uncovering a clue that appears to point towards a new intended victim. It's another 24 hours in A&E on Channel 4 at 9, and over on Channel 5, there's a new Bristol-based crime drama, The Crow Girl. On BBC One, the drama I, Jack Wright continues with two episodes at 9:15 and then another after the news at 10:40. For something altogether less dramatic, head over to BBC Two at 10 for Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing, this week in the River Severn. ITV have the series Love and Death at 11:30, whilst on Channel 4 at 10 you can learn about the secret lives of gypsy wives in a new series which follows the story of a gypsy family living on a troubled council estate. Now for Tuesday. It's a creative early evening today with the Great British Sewing Bee on BBC One at 8 and Bake Off the Professionals on Channel 4, also at 8. On BBC One at 9, there's a new series of Murder 24/7 when the documentary crew follow detectives and specialists involved in murder investigations, this week in Worcestershire. Also at 9, but on ITV, the drama The Dark continues, whilst on Channel 4 at the same time, a new drama series, The Undeclared War, starts. This is also on at the same time on Wednesday. Over on Channel 5 at 9, the drama The Crow Girl continues. The next episode of this is on Wednesday at the same time. On to Wednesday. Evening viewing starts on BBC One at 7 with Our Lives' Heavy Horses. This programme follows Kate Mobbs Morgan, who has built up a successful business by combining her passion for working in the great outdoors with her interest in working horses, specialising in forestry work and land management. After EastEnders on BBC One, there's The Repair Shop at 8 and the final episode of Bake Off the Professionals on Channel 4 at 8. At 9 on BBC One, Murder 24/7 continues, and over on BBC Two at 9, Saving Lives at Sea is in Portsmouth with the crew enduring Storm Eunice and its 100 miles an hour winds. Now for Thursday. In addition to the regular daytime programme and soaps, your evening starts on BBC Two with Escape to the Country, this week with a couple who move from Australia to the Peak District in Derbyshire. This is followed by Digging for Britain with Alice Roberts when she learns about a Roman bathhouse found beneath a cricket ground in Carlisle. At 8 over on BBC One, the art programme Fake or Fortune continues and is followed at 9 by Who Do You Think You Are? This week, the award-winning actor Adil Khatar traces his maternal Indian-Kenyan family. On Channel 4 at 8, George Clark meets architect Stuart in another Remarkable Renovations. This is followed at 9 by Murder Case, The Digital Detectives. The team begins a fast-moving investigation following the fatal stabbing of a young man on a residential street in March 2020. Over on Channel 4 at 8, it's live coverage of the Commonwealth Games opening ceremony. No audio description, but it might be of interest to some. And finally on to Friday. Ronan Kemp kicks off things on BBC Two at 6:30 with the health series Just One Thing. He recommends a counterintuitive approach to exercise. At 7 on BBC One, there's another episode of Our Lives, this time hunting the great bluefin tuna. Following the return of the fish to Northern Ireland, two Antrim anglers establish a new fishery. At 8 on BBC One, there's a new series of the crime drama Granite Harbour. The investigation starts when a girl is found dead near a traveller's site. Over on Channel 4, also at 8, follow cosmetic surgeons as they deliver bespoke, undetectable results in Surgery Secrets of the Super Rich. This is followed by the usual Friday evening silliness in Celebrity Gogglebox. Also at 9, but on BBC Two, there's a reboot of the police drama series Bergerac based in Jersey. Alternatively, head over to ITV at 9 for episodes 3 and 4 of The Twisted Tale of Amanda Knox. Your only late-night film choice is the coming-of-age drama Janal Planet, which is also on ITV at 11:05. We hope you find something interesting to watch this week. Thank you.
DNF Soundings.